Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Ooh, the music's back.
New music.
Are we live? Are we live, Casey?
Yeah.
We are live. Yeah. Wow, look at that. Hello, everyone. Jose Youngster, the MMAfighting.com, here with another Wednesday edition of the A-Side Live Chat. I know we're bringing you three episodes a week during this pandemic quarantine times. And, of course, we always have a guest of honor every single week. And I am excited for this one because she is by far one of our most requested guests. I've asked many fans who they'd like to see on. And she is either one, if not the top requested names. I've been tweeted a lot. When are you going to get this fighter on? When is she going to come on the show? And she is here for a Wednesday edition. Roxanne Modafari has joined Pizzi and Casey and I on the A-Side Live Chat. Now, before we get into the fan questions, Rox, I have to ask you, how has quarantine life been for you during this pandemic?
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm really honored that fans request me. That's really cool. Quarantine has been super, like, emotional roller coaster, up and down. Like, I'm training in one of my coach's garages right now, so it's not super bad. Like, it sucks. Like, I feel like I'm in Thailand getting a camp. You know, it's so bizarre. Like, everything is so bizarre. And not training with my best friend, Serena. Training is, I don't know. And I'm training like three times a week with my physical trainer. And at first I was training with him. And then it was like, wait, we all have to wear masks. So then, like, he's standing 6 feet away from me. And I'm pulling the sled in his backyard because the gyms are closed. So I'm like running up and down his street in the behind his house with the sled. throwing stuff. So, you know, he says that I'm getting stronger because I'm not overtraining. You know, I'm like just doing his conditioning. So I'm getting stronger. I just hit two maxes on my deadlifts, you know, like
wow.
The first week of quarantine, I beat my personal record. And then
wow.
Days later, I beat my next personal record by 20 pounds.
Whoa.
Cool. So I'm feeling pretty good. I want to train with the team and this all sucks, but it's very bizarre. Very bizarre. And I can't really post about anything because I get socially shamed for leaving my apartment. I'm like, I'm hanging out with my, you know, one training partner and everyone's like, that's not 6 feet. I have to be a good example, you know, because Vegas is different than New York. I don't want to be telling people to go out and train with everybody. Like, please wear a mask in the grocery store. Please limit your, you know, exposure. So it's like people are mean to me about that. Like, I stop posting like 70% of what I'm doing because I don't want to get socially shamed online. So that's how quarantine's been for me.
Yo, Roxy, you were absolutely shredded ahead of your last fight. Now, if you're even getting stronger, that must be like –
huge.
Yeah, I mean, it was notable, right? I can remember even said it to you in the pre-fight. I was like, you look ridiculously ripped at the moment. So, I mean, you're going to be even stronger now next time?
My walk-around weight has gone up, you know, so I'm trying to, like, it's getting, you know, harder and harder to cut weight, you know, because my walk-around weight's going up. But, you know, I can still do it. But, yeah, thank you. I'm excited to get even stronger to defeat my next opponents.
Quality.
Quality. Casey, what's your personal record?
What are we talking about? Doing the 40, deadlifts? What are we doing?
Let's talk deadlifts. What's your personal record?
Like a million.
You don't have to share the number. I didn't share my 1 million.
1 million.
Over 9,000.
Yeah, over 9,000.
That's what I was hoping Casey would say.
Be a little modest, sorry.
But of course, as everyone knows, this is not our podcast. This is the fans' podcast. You can ask any question you want. Roxy is here. I'm sure you have a lot of questions for her. For whatever reason, you might have questions for us, even though we have an actual professional fighter here to answer your questions. So without further ado, Casey, what is our first question from our lovely listeners? From Sean Denny, at Denny Rants, hashtag the A-side. The UFC embraced more of a Japanese production style for weigh-ins and entrances. Would it noticeably improve the product, or would it just still just be about the fight? We've talked about this a lot on the show, on our loves, our affinity for the entrances, the ramps, the pyrotechnics, everything we see from the Pride and Rising days, even when Tyson Fury fought Deontay Wilder, they had those epic entrances. So, Roxanne, I'll ask you this. Are you a fan of the, quote, Japanese production style, as Sean says in this tweet, or do you like the basic just walk out to the entrance, walk out to the octagon and fight?
No, yeah, I totally agree that the more interesting and entertaining it is, the better production it is, right? So it's kind of a bummer that, you know, people can't do, fighters can't do more with their walkouts and weigh-ins, you know, very limited. I'm very grateful I'm allowed to wear the wigs. You know, I actually just asked one of the staff if I could wear a Reebok pink bra or something that I bought just because it has Reebok on it. And they're like, oh, no, you have to wear the UFC provided stuff. It's like, all right. But I still think that since we're fighting in Reebok, that's fine. You know, we should be able to, you know, wear the whatever we want for walkouts and weigh-ins. So I think that would be better. But, you know.
Have you had any other ideas nixed by the UFC? I know Ben Rothwell has always wanted to walk out with his robe, and they've always nixed it. I know Dominic Reyes wanted to walk out with a Kobe Bryant jersey, and the UFC nixed it because none of them were Reebok. They weren't Reebok. And, of course, we always see the fighters with tape over their Nike sneakers and their Adidas sneakers. Have you had any ideas nixed by the UFC before walking out?
The pink bra. But. Yeah. Some other things, but you know, I'm allowed to show my individuality with the wig, so that's good. But you know, it's my job, I think, to make me money, so I'm gonna sure. happily proceed because I love the UFC and I'm happy to be in the organization.
I think from like a consumer point of view, like when you're watching these shows, I think the more uniqueness a fighter can bring to the table, like Roxy always does with the wigs, mm-hmm. It's better for building their brands. And essentially, as sole traders, not employees, I think they need to be given a bit of space to show the world what they're all about. So I just on the Reebok thing, that's one thing that really kind of, I think it's like it's such a different era from before Reebok, obviously, because people could put their personalities out there through their attire more. You know, you could learn something about them from what they were wearing and stuff. And that's kind of a thing of the past. So I'm always for more unique.
Like style benders.
I was going to say, I'm sure Izzy's following like skyrocketed after that entrance in Australia.
Like yeah, it was amazing. And look at the amount of shit he took for that, Roxy. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're doing the most badass shit in the world. They're still going to find a way to take a few shots at you. So,
oh, really?
I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. That.
Favorite,
oh, I can't believe it.
Most memorable entrance you can remember for anyone on the panel.
For me?
For anyone.
And Miller's walking out with those dancing girls in the
That is the correct answer. That is what I was hoping
for. That has to be the number one of all time. Like, come on.
Was that a dream?
I don't know if I was there or if I was just watching.
I remember, no, it was for a Strikeforce card, actually. I think you fought the same card of Jason. What was it?
I thought it was
Chicago.
A dream.
I did fight on the same card.
Was it Chicago? You fought
Fedor. Fedor versus Brent Rogers.
Oh wow!
Yeah. Wow.
That was the dancing girl. When that was Pride. He had Japanese girls.
Yeah, but he brought him out for Strikeforce too.
Oh, he did.
Yeah. You know, and I remember that, Roxy, because I was with Jason shooting some behind the scenes stuff, and you had your autograph book with you, and all the fighters sign an autograph book. Yeah, and I thought it was the most adorable thing because you were on the card, but yet you were like, oh my god, Fedor or Jason. I think it was so cute.
I gave that book to my webmaster. It was
Hester wanted to add that he did that entrance, yeah, for both Strikeforce and Dream. But yeah, I think King Mo's had a lot of big ones. Big fan of Ryzen. I was a big fan of Michael Venom Page when he fought on the Tokyo show that Casey was at. Came out with the Akatsuki robe. That was a fun one. I know. I was very jealous of how well he pulled that off. He came out with the dagger in his mouth too. PT, is that what's your most memorable entrance?
I think just probably a bit from an Irish point of view, the McGregor entrance with Sinead O'Connor was really epic. Mm-hmm. I mean, people like were crying in the crowd. I turned around and half of Ireland was there. And like seeing 45-year-old men crying, like just weeping openly, like surrounded by their friends. I was like, wow, this is some shit's going down here, boys. But another great entrance, and every time I watch it, I love it, is Paddy Pimblett from Cage Warriors coming out to Lethal. Oh, what's the name of the song? I don't know. It's a dance song. It's like a Tiesto song, and he comes out to it. But he was coming out to this like with 10,000 people in Liverpool just losing their minds. Like, you'd see people brought their kids in the crowd. Like, he was such an icon there. And every time he kind of comes out to that, he even managed to make it dramatic when there was no crowd at that last Cage Warriors show. He came out to it. There was no one in the crowd, but you could just feel this buzz through the live feed. So that's definitely among my favorites.
Hopefully he's in the... Go ahead.
Oh, I forgot my most memorable entrance. Just last year when I went in Hawaii and Elima Lei walked out with all her families and friends, and they did like I'm not sure what it's called, but traditional dance, and just watching the crowd cry and Elima crying, and then she went out and won her fight. It was awesome.
Yeah, I'll plug your video that you did for Elima, because that is still one of the most emotional videos I've ever seen in my entire life, the backstage footage of that. But, Casey, next question. Thank you, Sean, for one of your lovely questions.
Love you, Danny.
Again. From At The Seaside, top three female bouts you're looking forward to and want to see by the end of 2020. So, Roxanne, I will start with you. Top three, I'll say potential female bouts you are looking forward to the most, and some that maybe might not happen, but you'd like to see by 2020, end of 2020.
Number one, me versus Lauren Murphy would be great.
Ooh.
Called me out, and then I think we were supposed to fight, and then it was like in the middle of the quarantine, and she's like, no, so I don't know, it's fine, but sometime soon, let's fight, you know? Next would be JoJo and Valentina. My teammate,
yes.
For the title. I'm really looking forward to that one. You know, JoJo's gonna shock the world. I hate that. Like, she can do it. Oh, that's gonna shock the world by beating Macy Barber. Like, okay, that's nice. Thanks. Anyway, that fight's gonna be great. Those are the two that came in mind. Me and then JoJo. Yeah. Anyone? All the girls. I always pay attention.
Pete, you're looking forward to?
Yeah, top of my list was JoJo and Sheva. You know that we're all buzzing for JoJo and Shevchenko in Europe. We can't wait. And I mean, when I think JoJo challenges Shevchenko in a very different way than anyone she's fought before. She's a fantastic striker, and she's come on so much thanks to Roxanne with the grappling, right? Like, I mean, she's always saying how much she's grateful for you guys kind of teaching her a lot about the ground game. And I think under John, it's really flourished, as we've seen. But as well as that, I'd love to see maybe Tatiana Suarez back in the mix, maybe against Joanna. That would be a tremendous fight.
100%.
And I'd love to see this is one that's a bit Leslie Smith v Sinead Kavanagh again. That was a brilliant fight on Bellator. It was in Houston, I believe. Very controversial. It was basically a continental divide on who thought who won, but it was a brilliant fight. I mean, Jesus, it was a great striking matchup, and I'd love to see that again in Dublin, if you don't mind.
Casey, okay, so you're a big fan of the Amanda Nunes Felice Spencer, right?
Yeah, I'm really bummed that fight isn't happening anytime soon.
Oh yeah, I want to see that one too.
Yeah, I think Spencer is just a very tough matchup for Amanda Nunes, especially at 145. So I want to see it. I really want to see Zhang, Wiley Zhang versus Rose Namajunas, if Rose can get past Andrade. I know Rose is going through her situation right now, but hopefully, you know, she gets back into competition soon. when she's ready. And another match I would love to see. You know what? I really want to see. I want to see Roxy versus Valentina. Yeah, I just. I mean, I know Valentina's got busy. She's busy with JoJo right now, but I think Roxy, the storyline. I think Roxy's just. I mean, she's right there. I mean, I think she's at the prime of her career right now, and I think after the Barber win, after she already beat the other Shevchenko sister, I think the storyline's right there, and I just think it's a great matchup for both of them. So those are three lady fights I want to see soon.
That Barber fight, though, I mean, we should talk about that most definitely. I can't remember a buzz being like that in the media room. That was insane, right? When we're all gathered around watching.
Not even just the media room. And if you look at our YouTube and numbers, outside of the main event, Roxanne did the most video views that entire week in pre-fight interviews and post-fight interviews. So it wasn't even just the media. The fans were invested in that fight as well.
But the actual fight was incredible to watch. Yeah. You know, it was. Have you watched it back, Roxanne? Like, I mean, can you feel that energy when you watch it back?
Man, I was like, I can't friggin' pass her half guard, like, for half the fight. So, and that's where I'm good. So I'm like, all right, I got some good positions. I elbowed her a bunch. It was awesome. Man, I got to find a better way to pass her half guard. And everyone's like, that's the best fight of your life. Cool. So, I mean, my perception of the fight, I think, is different than a lot of people's because I'm so critical of myself. But no, like, I really think I was able to show some, you know, more power in my punches, you know, in my strikes. You know, I've been working on that a lot, you know, with my coaches at Syndicate, John Wood, also AJ Matthews, and my strength conditioner, Lorenzo Pavlica. Like, they've all been working together and I've been doing different things. And man, I feel like I reached a new level and like a new stride kind of. So man, like, I didn't even get to do half the striking that I wanted to do. Like, I have so much planned. So that's why I'm like, man, I hope the UFC offers me a fight kind of soonish. You know, that I can, you know, have a decent camp and then get in there and like show what I can do, you know, because I now, and also, you know, I've been working with Neil Melanson a little bit on different ways to pass the half guard. And,
ooh. So Roxy,
whoever, Lauren's going to have to, you know, if she is indeed my next opponent. Like, I never seem to fight people I think I'm going to fight. Like, right. I thought I was going to fight Lauren first. And then it was, as I was waiting for the bout agreement, they're like, oh, just kidding. Here's Macy Barber. It's like, oh, okay. Whoever.
So, Roxy, when you rewatched that fight versus Macy and you saw the problems in the half guard, were there technical errors that you saw from your side, or was just Barber just being just super defensive and just really not letting you move?
People don't give her enough credit for her ground game. You know, I saw people trashing her online, but she's pretty good. Like, I was trying to, you know, when I was in half guard, I was trying to use my shoulder pressure to turn her face in the other direction and turn her hips in the other direction so I could mount. But she was properly, like, shrimping her hips, you know, and making herself turn so I couldn't pass. And then she was tying up my hand so I couldn't punch her. And then she bridged and rolled me over from mount, which is like the most basic mount escape because I left my hand too close. And then when I went to take her back, she kicked her leg free, so I lost a hook. Like, she did a good job of foiling my stuff. So she's no, like, slouch on the ground. So, I mean, I also did a good job. I was dominant there, but, you know, I want to give her a little credit as well.
I think that's a fight that will inevitably have to happen again at some point. I just think, like, with all the drama of I think years down the line, like, I'm not talking next fight or whatever. I can imagine that that's going to be, there will be a huge appetite for that if it is. If Macy can get back to where, you know, where she was, essentially, I think there will definitely be an appetite for a rematch. I'll leave it there.
So, Roxy, are you in the camp? We've had Anthony Smith on the show, and he said he every time he watches his fights back, he thinks he is the worst fighter on the UFC roster. Even when he knocked out Shogun, he's like, I suck at fighting so much, because he knows the mistakes going through his head, and he knows what's going on in his head during specific moments. Are you in that same camp?
No. Yes and no. You know, I give myself credit for what I've done, and then I'm the kind of fighter who, like, people say, well, okay, back up. People say you learn more from a loss than from a win, but I kind of disagree. Like, I always watch the fight, and even if I've won the fight, I ask my coaches, like, hey, how could I have done better? Oh, there's the spot. Could I have done something better? And then they teach me something. So, you know, I analyze everything and always just try to make improvements on everything. So, yeah.
Always learning. We had Corey Sandhagen on. He said he was his own favorite fighter. So, good mix. Andre Feely said the same thing. He goes, I love watching my fights, man, especially when I get – I don't like watching myself lose, but I'll watch my highlights. He'll like go to bed watching his highlights. So both camps exist on the A side. But, Casey, next question.
I actually have a question for Roxy right now because we talked – she mentioned it a little bit, how you wanted to you wanted to show your hands off a little more. I remember interviewing you a few years ago, and you talked about you were very excited about getting your first TKO. You hadn't gotten it yet at that time, but I think at the very next fight, you wind up getting a TKO with elbows on the ground. You were very excited about that. Do you wish to get a straight up knockout with your hands at some point? Is that a goal now? Because I know at the beginning of your career, you were all like jiu-jitsu, but you're a different fighter now.
This is correct. I would like a hit them, they fall down unconscious knockout. That's my next goal.
Whoa. Just a one-shot kill? Just.
I don't want on my record TKO. Well, that would be fine, but I would like KO on the record, you know? That's my goal. That would be cool. At least once.
Roxy,
then I can go back to trying to jiu-jitsu them, but at least.
Roxy, everyone loves you. Like, you're such a positive person in this space. Like, you're famous for it. I was just wondering, like, I'm sure you've been asked this a million times, but what is the most amount of trash you've ever talked to someone? Like, was there ever a point where you were up in someone's face, giving it socks, and you're like, wow, this isn't like me at all. I just drifted out of the Roxy positivity for a second. Have you ever had a moment like that?
Well, when I was on Ariel Helwani's show, I told him that Macy was good at blocking punches with her face. That was probably it. Probably the darkest that I've gone there.
I was just wondering. I had to ask. I'm sorry. I know you always ask.
I'm trying, man. I'm trying to be a little more like, you know, I don't know.
Nah, it would just be you. It's great.
Okay. Well, hey, actually, before the fight, I was like, I need to make her bleed a little bit to get to and then, I mean.
That's a little bit. Making her bleed a little bit of an understatement after that fight.
Yeah, happened. Holy shit.
That's a fight. Casey, next question from our love. Thank you at the Seaside for another lovely question.
Ooh.
Oh, so this individual, and I wrote his name down because it didn't show up. It's Cote Del Fuego on Twitter. He's DM'd me this many, many times, and I feel we should answer this time now that Pete C is on and Roxy. Hi, Jose. What's your favorite manga? Saludos from Jalisco, Mexico. So, Roxanne, I'll start with you. What is your favorite manga?
I don't read a lot of manga. I mostly watch anime. However, Angel Sanctuary,
Tenshi no Kunimoku,
is because it wasn't made into an anime, and it was very unique. Where like this boy fell in love with his sister, and it turns out he's reincarnated an angel, and it was very weird, and they went to heaven and hell, and like that's probably why you've never heard of it. Probably super like. controversial, but it was really great. Actually, there's an OAV, so that was my favorite manga. It was super deep and emotional. I'm like, wow, it was really good. Angel Sanctuary.
My three favorite
anime are, you know, Naruto, One Piece, and Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, I mean,
check out Angel Sanctuary. There's an OAV.
I'm 100% gonna check that out. I have to now. Like, I will 100% check it out. PT, I think I know your answer. What's your favorite manga?
I've read two volumes of Akira. The first one is my favorite. But I like the second one too because we got to meet Akira finally. But I mean, it could be 3, 4, 5, and 6 by the end of the week, you know? They could all be up there in the mix. But yeah, I've only read one. It's very good.
And you know how to read them now.
It was only a 6-month process, but we got there in the end.
For some backstory for people who haven't seen the video, Pizzi has the collector's edition of the Akira box set, which reads right to left, as the majority of mangas do. There is my volumes behind me read left to right, though. So Pizzi was very confused why the story didn't make any sense because he started on the last page. So he was reading left to right, and he's like, I've read this 1,000 times. Why, like, who are these people, and why does it make no sense? So we have the video. I was actually waiting to interview.
I had to bring it to Las Vegas. I had to bring it across the world so he could show me how to read it.
Because I had to show him how to read it. And I was actually in line waiting to interview you And the video is out on Twitter somewhere where he's like, look at my book. And he's like, let's start on the first page. And I was like, this is the last page, sir. And then he flipped it over. So the whole ordeal is caught on camera. If you haven't watched it, you can go make fun of Pizzi. But now he knows how to read it. So congratulations, well, Pizzi.
But the funny thing was, I got really worried when Jose was like, oh, wait, we'll tell Roxy when she comes out. And I was like, no, don't shame me. I was like, the two of them.
It's okay.
You're going to take too much abuse.
It's okay, thank you. I understand.
That's funny. Casey, do you like any manga?
No, nah. I respect the art form, but I'm just not a. I have not manga's not my thing.
Well, to answer this individual's question, because yeah. He's DM'd me so many times, I have three. It's Akira. Go ahead. It changes frequently depending on my mood. Akira, Nausicaa and the Valley of the Wind, which is also made into a movie. It is a Ghibli movie by Miyazaki, but it was a manga first. I highly recommend it. And then if you are not into fantasy or sci-fi or anything, Cross Game is a phenomenal show about a high school baseball team in Tokyo. So I cannot recommend that enough. It is 8 volumes. It's sitting behind me. 10 out of 10, one of the best comic books I've ever read in terms of character development. Yes, it might sound weird, but High School Baseball in Tokyo, Cross Game. Check it out.
All right.
Thank you for the question. I
So right. We should go Cross Game next, maybe, Jose?
My next one should be Cross Game? It's not even remotely close to Akira whatsoever, but I thoroughly enjoy it.
All right, we're going to go to the YouTube comments, and we got one of our frequent commenters, Ice King, right here. Oops, let me move it so you can see it. There we go.
Ice King on YouTube. If Roxanne was a UFC splinter, who would her UFC Donatello, Michelangelo, Leonardo, and Raphael be? So I think this is asking, if you are Master Splinter from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, who would be your four pupils?
Me?
Yeah. Yes. If or Roxanne. If you were Splinter.
Oh, honestly, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles came out before I became a tomboy. I was still watching My Little Ponies. So I can't answer that question. I'm sorry. I'm not that familiar.
No worries.
Tomboy, yeah, sorry.
Sorry, Ice King, no answer for you.
Sorry.
All right, hold on. Let me find another question. Let's see. Here we go.
From Frankfurt, another longtime commenter on YouTube. What are the top three must things to do in Tokyo? Now, I am unique, and I am the only one on this panel who has never been to Tokyo. So for the three other members on this panel, what are three things someone has to do the first time they go to Tokyo?
Go to Asakusa, which is an awesome place with big shrines and lots of places to buy food and little trinkets. There's a samurai museum in Shinjuku Kabukicho, which is super small, but
savage.
Cool. And they have a guy do like a sword demonstration, and they let us do it too. And I volunteered and I had to hold a sword, and he showed me how to hold it. Oh, it's so cool. And finally, Tokyo Tower.
Yeah. PC, do you agree? You look like you're deep in thought right now.
Oh man, I did some with shit over there. It was unbelievable. I mean, you gotta go to the Golden Guy and drink around there. That's unbelievable. That's a really interesting experience. The bars are all like 6 seats in them or whatever. And that's brilliant. We went during cherry blossom season, and we can't remember the place we went to see them, but we went through a load of parks and we spent a whole day doing it, and that was amazing. That was beautiful. And after that, it's just like a load of like food. And I think the best thing to do with Tokyo is just walk around and get lost, because you're going to have a good time no matter where you go. You know, it's an unbelievable place. I was just saying to the guys before you came on, Roxy, all I'm thinking about is going back there. Like I can't think about anything else. I'm just like, I just need to go back there as soon as possible. So that's what I'm dreaming about as soon as this whole thing ends, just getting back to Tokyo.
Casey. You've been many a time too. You've been a lot for fights as well. So, but yeah. Three things I have to do first time I go to Tokyo before I let Roxy go.
Well, real quick then. If you're an MMA fan, save up a couple thousand bucks. Go there for now it's gonna be Ryzen, but go there for the big New Year show. See a big show at Tokyo Dome. It's it's just an amazing experience just to be in the arena, to see Japanese fans, to see the walkout, see just the event from beginning to opening ceremonies to the last fight. Just save a little money, go see a show at the Tokyo Dome. And I think PT said it right. After that, just eat food and walk around the city. It's just a great place, right? When you say rocks, just being there is enough, and then you'll find things that you like. Just enjoy the city, and don't be a rude American jerk. just make us look good.
The people are amazing, aren't they? Like, yeah. I mean, that's the best thing about it. Everywhere you go, me and Elaine just kept on making loads of Japanese friends everywhere we went. We'd go into one bar and leave with four people. It was always the way, man. It's just incredible.
And well, do some karaoke in Japan.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. I hate karaoke, and I actually enjoyed going to the box.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey,
man. Top of the list. Well, it is 10:30. Yeah. I know Roxanne was short on time or limited on time this week. So I cannot thank you enough for stopping by the podcast again. I know our listeners have been absolutely clamoring for you to be on the show. I know they're really excited. We've had more questions come in than ever before. Well, I hope we narrowed them down to a few. I believe that. What are you holding up, Casey? Oh, there you go. Happy Warrior fan.
Autographed. Autographed.
Oh, there you go. Keep that. But anyway, of course, Roxanne, as the guest of honor, before we let you sign off, is there anything you'd like to say or plug, or the floor is yours for whatever promo you want to cut?
Thanks for having me, guys. On my website, RoxanneMatafiore.net, I'm selling my books, my memoirs book, and my How to Be Positive book. So check it out if you feel like it.
Well, thank you so much, Roxanne. We'd love to have you on when this quarantine is over, or even before then. I know our fans would love it too, but stay safe out there. And thanks again so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks. All right. You're a legend, Roxy. Cheers.
All right. Roxy's still there? Oh, she gone.
Thanks again.
Oh, no, Roxy. She's gone. All right. Joining us.
That was a blast. She's always great, isn't she? Yes, she is by far the as soon as we got Jared Cannonier, I got many a tweet asking when Roxanne was going to be on. I think they just wanted her to hear her talk about anime and Japanese culture and everything. So always happy to talk to her. But I'm sure we have a lot more questions.
Yeah, we do.
I saw somebody
slagging my hair, and that you're dead right. It's a mess, but I'm gonna keep it going until the end of this.
No, my hair's looking good. It's in that point where it's still really short, but it's not buzzed. I look terrible.
I'd take that over my shit any day of the week.
from longtime commenter Esther Lynn. PC looking a little bit like Eddie Hearn.
Oh my god, he's a lot better looking than I am, but I appreciate that.
I'm into scruffy PC. That's what I was saying. Beautiful quarantine beard you have going on.
Oh man, if you smell me, you wouldn't say the same thing, man. Oh my god, the dog smells better than me at the moment.
For those of you just listening to this, because I know we have a lot of people that only listen on our podcast network, go watch the YouTube video. Then you can see PT's glorious quarantine video. From at Cam Kelly, at Cam Kelly Gang on Twitter, at hashtag the A-side. If you were in charge of launching a new tough season, what changes / additions would you make, and or what coaches, fighters, etc., would you want on? We've had this conversation a few times. I know Casey's had some ideas. PT, what are your ideas to revamp Tough if they ever bring it back?
You know, I thought like Contender Series was going to be the revamp of the Ultimate Fighter. And the one thing that's kind of frustrating, I guess, for European fans is like we want to see the people get a shot, you know, over there. If you remember, Brendan Loughnane was one of the only guys. He's one of the few guys who got a chance, and the buzz over here was crazy, man. It was insane.
I was actually at that Contender Series fight. Not only the buzz there, but that was right after the tour of the Apex. That was the launching. I believe he was one of the first fights in the new Apex building, and there was like a little press conference with Paul Felder and I think it was Fitzgerald. Brandon Fitzgerald, who were they were saying, which fight are you most looking forward to? And I cannot remember the name off the top of my head of Brandon Lochnane's opponent. Both of them picked that fight because whoever was winning that fight was going to go to the UFC. That was before.
And guess what?
I know. But guess what happened? He's not in the UFC.
The Celtic Fro. Thank you so much, Angie. That's what I call it. I love it. Yeah, I just feel like when you've got a promotion like Cage Warriors who's nearly produced 100 fighters for you, why wouldn't there be some type of cross promotional contender series there? You know, like you wouldn't even need to fly people out. You wouldn't need to do any of they have the stuff set up there. So just do it. Like let them have a contender series night. You know, you could get Dana via satellite or, you know, Mick Maynard or Sean Shelby to kind of do something like that. I think it would inject a lot of energy into the scene over here, to be honest. Something like that, because already when you're watching Cage Warriors title fights, you're like, well, the person who wins this is likely going to the UFC. So why not just, you know, use that platform to its advantage and do a European series kind of thing?
This is a question for you've said many a time that Cage Warriors is like, what do you call it? Like that white knuckle promotion where you win, you go through hell to get the title. Yeah. And then you go to the UFC. Would adding a contender series take away from that? Because like now you can, there might be an easier path to the UFC rather than just going through hell.
I mean, yeah. I mean, the thing is, I think for a long time the UFC should be doing more business with Cage Warriors anyway. I mean, I feel like, especially now that Bellator have come into this market and they have a lot more money to play with. I mean, they're signing up a lot of the great talents in the UK and Irish region. So, you know, it's impossible for like a grassroots promotion to compete with a Bellator. So I think the UFC should be injecting some cash into Cage Warriors so they can keep fighters there for longer, or so they can, you know, just compete with getting some names across. And not that they're doing a bad job. They're still a great promotion, still very, very interesting. But I do feel like that is one of the things that is very difficult for them to compete with. Just the salary, just the wage in general that the guys are picking up for fighting with Bellator as opposed to Cage Warriors.
Casey, I know you've had a few ideas in the past. For those of our listeners who don't know your ideas, what are some of your ideas to revamp the Ultimate Fighter if they do bring it back?
You know, I always had like ideas like, oh, you should do this, do that. But like the longer we get away from Ultimate Fighter, the idea of just quarantining fighters in a house before there was quarantining. I actually think it's it's unnecessary. It's been done. The whole putting fighters in a house, that part, you know, where they can't, no phones, no outside TV or whatever, and just, you know, throw some liquor in the house and see what happens. I just think that's just been just extremely played out. Unless you take out the alcohol, and now that weed is legal in Nevada, I don't know. Maybe, tough 420 season might be an idea.
We don't want to fight, Dana. Well, I love that guy.
Come on, let's just hang out. other than tough 420,
if they do bring it back, I want to see a matchmaking style similar to how K1 did it or how Bellator did their Grand Prix. I want a crazy selection process where like they have a life-size bracket up in front of them and like they draw ping pong number one, go stand like the day you want to fight. And then someone draws ping pong number two. They can fight that guy or they can choose another day. I want an epic present selection process. I don't want just like coach saying, we're going to select so-and-so to fight so-and-so. Like, I want the fighters to have the choice of where and who they want to fight. I want a crazy selection process with ping pong balls. Because I loved K1. That was when you saw, like, the Overeem-Badahari, like, rivalry where they go up on stage with the giant bracket behind them. Like, I want to see that drama. Or, like, Pitbull, when all of a sudden he's like, I want to fight in March and I want to fight this guy. Like, there was some drama to it. And it's that made it so much more interesting. I want to see a crazy selection process. I don't want just coaches picking their fighters and who they fight.
Yeah, I agree with Casey's like in the way that the thing is played out. I thought it was played out by season 5 nearly. You know, like I was like, all right, I want to watch the fights. Don't get me wrong, But just the house dynamic and stuff, I was like, I'm done with this shit. Like, I mean, we know what's going to happen. There's one loose cannon. He's going to go fucking crazy. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. You know, that's
some of them, you know, brought me back. Like, because like the Tough 20, that's the one where they add the straw weights. That one, I watched that season just because like I've been watching the straw weights for so long outside the UFC. Now that they're all in the same house, it was like a who's who of like women's veteran MMA. The live season I watched with when John Anik was a lot more involved, I watched that whole season because it was live. So there are ways that got me back. But the format itself is played out, as you all said.
Yeah, I just think the idea of like, because we're not watching the best fighter. We're watching who's the best fighter, but also a good roommate. You know? Right. I'm like, all right. It's like, it's just weird. And the house, and just, and even going back to the house, the whole, just the weight cutting issue was always big problems too. Actually, that's one reason. I mean, Carla Esparza is a great fighter, but Carla Esparza, the fact that she's really an atomweight fighting at strawweight, so her in the house was just a perfect fit for her fighting style and her weight cut, because she fights in a style that she can grind out fighters, not take any damage. It's only two rounds and not have big weight cuts. So the tough format was just incredibly advantageous for someone like Carla Esparza, and I just think that's not the way, like, it's not the way to find out who the best fighter is. It's the way to find out who the best roommate fighter is. So,
well, there's a lot of fighters that will win and then drop down immediately. Like, I know, didn't Shoeface win as a light heavyweight? Like, he's another grinding fighter who didn't cut weight in the house in Tough Brazil. And then he won, and then now he's middleweight.
The women's 45 season. I think, every fighter
dropped down to 135. Megan Anderson was very upset about that. They put together this whole season to find new 145 pound talent, and then the winner immediately drops down to 135.
And half the women there were already 35ers in general. Like what's her name? Sorry, how do you say her name?
Macy Chasen.
Macy Chasen. She was a 45er before. We just didn't know she was cutting down. But there were other fighters in there who had only fought at 35 who were just on the show strictly because they were just trying to get that opportunity. So I just thought that was – it just
– Or even Roxy. She was on Tough twice. The first time she was on, she was 135.
Yep.
And then she came back for the 125-pound season because back then that was the only way you could get into the UFC was being a 135er or a 115er. There was no 125-pound division.
Yeah, that's what – that I think Ash Daly, she was on the strawweight season. So that was a big season in Ireland. A lot of people were watching it. And, you know, she was like – she's a big, big strawweight, Jesus Christ. And to be making that weight so many times, like, I mean, she'll tell you herself. I mean, the damage she did to her body in that season was incredible, you know.
Guillerme Cruz wanted to add that Shoeface won Tough Brazil as a heavyweight and then dropped down. Well, I believe he's like a middleweight now. So, like, again – A lot of you see, like, even Mike Bisping won a light heavyweight. Rashad Evans at heavyweight too. Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yep. So the formula was there to not cut weight, win, and then drop back down. Didn't Manny Gambieran won? He competed at 155, and then like later on in his career, he left the UFC to go fight at 145 in WEC because he was a natural 145er. So the formula is there. At the seaside again, do you think Artem Lobov will have any MMA fights in the near future? # the A-side. Now, Pete, you and I chatted with Artem in Las Vegas in January. But since then, have you had any conversations with that camp, or do you have any idea if young Artem Lobov will have – I call him young Artem Lobov. That's more of a joke for the Twitter trolls who can call him the GOAT or young or up-and-coming prospect, Artem Lobov. Do you have any idea if we'll see him back trolls? Inside the cage anytime soon?
Yeah, we had him on Eurobash a few weeks back. It was great to have him on. About 3 weeks ago, I think. And the situation Artem's in now is like he's ready to fight across any discipline, but it's got to be for the right amount of money. And I think, you know, that makes business sense for him. Look at the amount of traction he brought to Bare Knuckle FC. I think it's undoubtable that, you know, he definitely has a huge name value. Even when Bellator were talking about a featherweight tournament, Artem was a free agent, and he was one of the big names that was kind of brought up to be involved. Even when he was on Eurobash 3 weeks ago, he was saying like he was right on the verge of signing for Bellator. but bare knuckle just kind of came in with a crazy offer at the time. So I think if the right offer is made, Artem is certainly interested in fighting MMA again. And you know, as far as I know, he has a few options on the table as well, because KSW were very interested in him recently as well. And there is a number of storylines there with Artem, because in his younger years, he used to just go anywhere. This is way before the UFC. He used to just go anywhere in the world if someone was looking for a fight. And somehow, very early on in his career, he ended up as the number one featherweight and lightweight in Poland just from going over and fighting dudes on short notice. So, I think there's some definite options there for him and KSW. I think it's a great move for them as a brand. Artem's going to put a lot of new eyes on them. And look, Bellator is still there. Bellator need to continue to make compelling matchups for this European series. And Artem is one of the biggest names out there available to them. So I think he certainly will have MMA fights in the future. I don't know how near. It depends on if these boxing contracts and these bare knuckle contracts come in a bit heavier than the MMA ones.
Well, I spoke with Martin Lewandowski in last July, so almost a year ago, and he was talking about he wanted to hold a KSW event in Chicago because he wanted to kind of test the U.S. market, and there's a big Polish scene in Chicago. You got to imagine having a name like Artem Lobov when you kind of break ground into the United States would benefit him tremendously. I also know he wanted to do like Phil DeFries versus Ryan Bader cross promotion, possibly on a Chicago card too, because Bader's fought in the Chicago area before. So they're making the right moves at KSW, and if they want to break ground in the U.S., you'd have to imagine Artem could play a big factor into that.
Absolutely, man.
I hope the money's right, and I hope I actually hope Artem signs with Bellator, considering that Bellator has an amazingly good featherweight division. I think it's the best division they have, and comparable to the UFC's featherweight division. I think those guys are that good. And throw Artem in there. I don't think Artem's going to be a top guy, but he's always going to be an action fighter. You always want to watch his fights, win or lose. You just know you're going to get an exciting fight. And
you could also inject a lot into the 155-pound division, too, if you want to. Like, throw him in there against, both Pitbull brothers, 145 and 155. Have him fight Chandler. But, imagine Benson Henderson versus Artem Lobov, just two drastically different styles in terms of aesthetics and fighting style. It's just fun.
The fight I want to see, the secret fight I want to see, and I don't want to see it right yet, but I want to see it within the next year and a half. I want to see Aaron Pico versus Artem Lobov.
Oh, my God.
Holy shit. Well, you see, that's the value for me.
The high action fight, and that's just going to – Let's see if Pico fights, in a non-smart way, in just a dumb way, and just wants to brawl, because that's how you can get in trouble with Artem, obviously, because I want to see Pico's power against Artem's chin, so sorry, PC.
But I think that you're dead right, and that's the exact kind of matchup that Bellator should be looking at for him, because his value is in the fact that he can, through his fighting Artem, he's going to create a lot of stars. You know, the looks of Patchy Mix, a fight like with Aaron Pico, any of these guys kind of elevates them to a new level, provided they win, of course. But I mean, I think that's where the value is. It's worth paying money to a guy who's going to create several stars for you through fighting him. And I really believe he does have that kind of power.
Make it happen, Bellator. I wanted him in the Grand Prix. We joked about it. The winner of the Grand Prix should just, not for the championship, the winner of the Grand Prix fights Artem. That is your prize.
So many interesting fights you can make with him. Like, I mean, when Artem starts talking about dudes, you're interested. He was even saying, talking about on short notice, let me fight MVP for $1 million. And it's just so interesting. I know it's crazy, but it's still interesting, you know? It's still interesting that he's throwing it out there. You got to appreciate it.
I love it.
Has Artem been has he been finished of strikes, or has he been finished recently at all? Am I forgetting?
Was Jason Knight not finished now? Was that not
the bare knuckle stuff with the rest?
Oh, MMA. I know he got MMA. Finished.
No, man, I can't remember. I mean, I'm sure he has. I think he's been submitted by Saul Rogers back in the day. I just can't, I have no image in my head of Artem being finished, really. So I guess
he was finished by Mike Wilkinson in 2011.
Heel hook, was it?
No, it was TKO.
Yeah.
He's lost. That was his only TKO loss ever, 2011, to Mike Wilkinson, and he's been submitted twice. And this is all MMA. So, but not in almost 10 years, he hasn't been finished.
You know what fight looks a little, his performance actually looks a little better is when he lost to Ryan Hall in the tough finale.
Yeah. Yeah.
The fact that he survived, like Ryan, remember Ryan Hall was just on his back for basically 14
unbelievable
minutes. And Ryan Hall really never got him close. He had him in control, but he never really got him like, you know, within that last inch. And I think looking back on it, I don't know what Artem has in him that he has that just amazing survival spirit. That's just like I'm a big fan of Artem Lobov. I don't care if he's the best or not the best, however you feel. But I always loved his fighting style. I love his attitude, and I think he's a guy that's really good for the sport.
Nice, super, super nice guy to talk to. And when we interviewed him, that our first failed interview with him, when a fan punched my microphone out of the camera, he was being mobbed by fans in the casino. And then there were so many fans there that when we interviewed him, a fan literally punched the mic adapter out, and we lost that interview forever. So that just shows you how popular
it was such a great interview as well. Like, people were going fucking crazy. Oh, man.
I caught, like, when someone punched it, I had to catch it out of the air. It popped out. I had to snatch it out of the air so it wouldn't fall into the ether of fans on that casino floor. But, yeah, popular cat that week.
Yeah. I can remember when Ryan Hall beat him, we all thought it was a bad omen and Connor was going to lose to Aldo. Yeah. Like, oh, no.
From at Susanna Fights on Twitter, which is the best fighter t-shirt design you've ever seen? I think the correct answer, there is one correct answer, and it is one of the two Korean Zombie shirts. That is my opinion.
I tell you, Izzy's one with the artist, his name, I forget his name, he's brilliant.
Oh, yes, I know what you're talking about.
The one for Melbourne that we were at, it was really cool. Yeah. Really, really cool. And the old Dethrone shirts were really unique with the Connor boxing stick, man. They were real cool, just very, very noticeable. Like, you'll see it and you know what it is straight away. So I thought that was pretty cool as well. Do you know, I always wanted to get them Affliction t-shirts with the septic pit bulls on them and all. And I'm so happy I was broke my whole life because I never could get one. And they look horrendous now. But at the time I was like, man, if I got one of these things, I would look the shit. But glad I didn't get one.
Was it Adam Nelson, Gorilla the Bear, that did that shirt?
Izzy's had a couple of shirts done. The official UFC one was done by a really talented artist called Jean Galang.
Yes, yes, that's the one.
Izzy actually has a couple of shirts. The official Reebok one is by Jean Galang. Google him, guys. He's really good. He's amazing. But then Izzy has his own shirt, a non-Reebok one, done by another artist. I don't know his name, but it's also very well done. But it's also funny. It's funny. Just that question. I just happened to tweet earlier how I missed.
Oh, I saw it. I thought that's where this question came from.
Oh, maybe that's where it came from. Yeah, because I actually pulled up a couple of photos. Where are they? Just because I was looking them up right now. Wait. There we go. So this is just a random.
That's the type of shit I was after. Yeah.
Look
at
that.
I wanted that stuff.
Look at that thing. That's what is that? A rib cage, a heart. Is the Echo shirt.
He needs the pit bull for the trifecta. Oh. Affliction always gave us pit bulls, some warrior scene, and maybe like.
Wasn't like there fucking always like a dumb cross with like bedazzles on
yes.
it?
Yes. Yes.
The shirt looks so heavy. Like physically
like someone
heavy.
Like pimped Jesus' ride.
Right there. Look at that. Look at that Anthony Johnson
shirt. That
looks
terrible, Anthony Johnson. That's a terrible shirt.
Oh, and if you're wondering why he has his eye covered up, that was after when he was fighting the UFC at welterweight. He had just received an eye poke, and it was from a no contest. I don't know. Kevin Burns, I think. Remember?
I cannot remember.
Yeah. But this started the whole trend of if you poke Anthony Johnson in the eye, he will murder you next time he sees you. So when they had the rematch.
Yes, he decapitated.
He decapitated that guy.
That's
and
right.
Then, of course, when he fought, when he moved up to light heavyweight, and he fought Alexander Gustafsson in Sweden.
Yep.
And he remember he got eye poked, and as soon as he recovered from it, within seconds, he murdered the man. Yeah. So yeah, but there's your shirt you're looking for. Crosses.
In terms of uniqueness, I remember I can't remember which fight it was. It might have been one of the Gray Maynard fights or the Benson Henderson fight. Frankie Edgar had one that it looked like a element symbol from a what do you call it the periodic table, and it said FB. That one. I wouldn't wear it because my name's not Frankie Edgar, but in terms of like uniqueness, that at the time, because this was in the middle of that era that Casey just talked about, where every shirt looked terrible, that one stood out to me just because it was a unique shirt. And the Korean Zombie ones, of course.
The classic Jesus didn't top as well. They were great back in the day.
I was a big fan of Don't Be Scared, Homie, the shirt that Nick Diaz put out. Someone gifted me one.
Nice.
Oh man, so many good shirts. I think we're due for a full on documentary on the era. What's the name for that? That's just the Silver Star Affliction Foil Bedazzle
Affliction era.
The Affliction era.
That's just like I'm sure Esther has a million photos.
They were so expensive.
They were also terrible.
No, they were amazing.
There was a shop in Dublin City Center that was getting them in, like before Conor was in the UFC. This is probably 2010, 2009. And there was that much of an appetite for them that you'd go into the shop and they'd be sold out every week. And I can remember I thought I did my brother a great favor by buying him this Fedor Emelianenko fucking Affliction t-shirt, and it was horrible, but he had to wear it like on like the 26th of December to make me feel good about myself, and then I never saw it again, and I was like, what happened to that cool shirt I got you? And he's like, oh, I don't know.
He's like, I like those shirts because it showed me the my friends that I didn't want to hang out with anymore.
We're talking about bad fashion, but in Japan that trend never really carried over. And when the late Kid Yamamoto fought in the UFC, he had his own fashion line, I think, and part of the Crazy B. I don't know if it was just his camp, but he always had amazing outfits.
He had this was his fighter shirt. Ruled. His shirts were so good. Like those are shirts I would wear like outside of like even if I wasn't a fight fan, like I would see that shirt and I would like that shirt. Yeah, but
you've got lovely. The logos is really nice.
It's a handsome man, Kid Yamamoto.
All right, that's a. Oh, you know what? Actually, one big regret I have, so I've been working in MMA 15 years. Don't have one tap out shirt, not one.
That's a regret.
Oh yeah, of course. Like I have nothing. I have no tap out shirts. Just even to wear ironically, just nothing.
Oh yeah.
If someone gifted you a tap out shirt right now, what would you do with it?
Wear it straight away.
Frame it.
All right, from Sean Denny at Denny Rance again on Twitter. Hashtag the A said, Jose, which is your favorite title fight from below? Connor v. Aldo. Aldo v. Connor. All of these are put in the champion second.
Stop it. I get it.
Lawler v. McDonald. Wiley v. Joanna. Rampage v. Griffin. Anderson Silva v. Sonnen.
I think he's put them all backwards to piss you off because he's made a concerted effort to change them all there. Well, Sonnen, I think he just wanted to piss you off.
Sonnen was the champ, though.
And I'm pretty sure wasn't Forrest Griffin. No, it was Forrest Griffin. No, Forrest Griffin beat Rampage. Yeah. Well, Lawler McDonald is the best fight of those.
That's cool. It was the most.
Well, in terms of just crate, because I was there and that was an epic card. Wiley Joanna was epic. Conor Aldo was 13 seconds. I'm sure that's historic for across the pond. Rampage versus Forrest Griffin, I vividly remember watching on my TV and like yelling at the camera. And I don't know which Anderson Son versus Chael Sonnen shirt fight you're talking about. That's tough.
I think it's easy. I think it's not a lot of hey.
It's if that's like in terms of like violence, probably that. But I can remember exactly where I was for all five of these fights, and I'm at different points in my life and for all five of them. So it's just interesting. It's actually interesting to look at that list and remember. I'll probably say Lawler McDonald just because that was an insane night. That was just an insane night to be at. I was also covered in beer by the end of that fight because that's when they sat me in the auxiliary seating. So people all around me were Irish fans waiting for the fight after, and I was absolutely drenched in things being thrown in the air.
But the thing about that fight for me that was very important, and I guess it's, you know, the Irish mainstream media at the time were basically saying they never got behind MMA. They thought it was bullshit. And they were kind of saying that this is all basically like the WWE. It's all choreographed. And to have that fight happen before the Conor fight was like a religious experience for a lot of people watching in Ireland because they were like, holy shit. Like, how stupid do you look saying that this is choreographed when both these guys have poured their life out all over the fucking canvas for you. So I think it's an important fight for that regard. And just the drama of that fight was incredible. I can remember I asked a brilliant journalist, one of the best in Ireland, Ken Early. I texted him. He was sitting across from me on press row as we're watching it. And I texted him. I said, well, what do you think of that, Ken? Because he was just basically there for the McGregor fight to cover for the Irish Times. And he sent me back. He said, this is like a religious experience. So I always just remember that. And I think it's incredible. I'll go for Wiley and Joanna after that, though.
That would probably be number two for me. I was about 10 feet away from that fight happening in front of me. And as soon as that fight ended, I was like, that's probably the fight of the year. And then lo and behold, that was one of the last events we ever had. So it is the fight of the year.
They have to stop doing it after that.
For me, Wiley versus Joanna was my favorite title fight from this, with a close second being Lawler McDonald.
Yeah. It's 1A, 1B. Yeah. It depends on what you mean by favorite in terms of the actual fight. Those are the two. But like, I have good memories of watching Rampage Forrest Griffin, because that was before. That was when I was just a fan. Like, I like convinced my dad to buy the pay per view and everything. So I was like screaming at it. So like, I have good memories of that. But in terms of actual fight, it's McDonald Lawler, or Lawler McDonald Wiley Joanna in terms of the actual fight.
Cool. Cool. All right. What is this question? Oh, big question.
The role of MMA media. During my time of watching and following MMA, I have seen a lot of arguments between the MMA media and fighters/managers. And then this person asked Roxanne a question. She's no longer here, so we'll skip that part. If there is a difference in thought, where do you think the difference of thought about what... If there is a difference in thought, where do you think the difference of thought about the role of the media in the MMA world comes from? Is it as simple as the fighter is only looking out for his own and how he or she is portrayed, or is it something completely different? This is a very oddly worded question from Steve SDW. So, PT, I'll start with you. What do you think the role? Yeah, I don't quite know. It's worded very strangely. He also asked Roxanne, like, what do you consider the role of the media in the MMA world? For the rest, as media in the MMA world, what do you consider to be your role? So, PT, what is your role in the grand scheme of MMA?
But just like to gather information and get it to the people who want to consume the information. I mean, that's the whole game, right? Yeah. I mean, try and help people who can't get their message out there. And sometimes we have to say things because the fighters don't want to say the things, because it ends up in a complicated situation. And then, of course, making sure that lots of events get canceled. Of course, that's one of our primary roles, of course. But yeah, I don't really understand. I think a lot of confusion about the MMA media comes from, there's loads of people, vocal people involved on MMA social media. And I think they get confused a lot with people who are media members. I think that's a bit of an issue, but other than that, I think that's our job. I don't really know what else to say. I think it's fairly self-explanatory, right?
Casey,
like, what's the weatherman do? Tells you what the weather's going to be.
Yeah.
Casey, what is your role in the grand scheme of MMA?
And I want to be jokey and just go, oh, we're here to stop the fights from happening. We're here to make sure no one does, no one MMAs anymore. You know, it's like, no, it's like, I was like, oh, I've dedicated most of my professional life to MMA. Now it's time to make sure that ends. So no, it's just to tell stories in the most honest way we can. Yeah, there's always going to be it seems so much worse in the last 4 years or so, where just people just don't understand the role of media, of journalism. And a lot of times, yeah, it does overlap. It feels like promotion for the UFC or Bellator, but it's not. It's like, when we're covering weigh-ins, we're not promoting that event. We're covering those weigh-ins because this is a big sporting event. It's important. People care about it. That's why we are covering it. We're not there to promote the event. The UFC is there to promote their own event, but we are there to cover it, to document it. So like, if like, take for example, for like weigh-ins, if there's, say, no fans show up, the UFC on their production, they won't show the crowd. They make sure they won't do it because they don't want to give that impression. But as media members, we don't care if like it's like if there's no crowd there, we'll show there's no crowd there. If there's 10,000 people for those weigh-ins, we'll show that there's 10,000 people for those weigh-ins. So that's what we're there. We're just here to tell the story of how it is without. And if sometimes that crosses over promotion where it's the same storyline as the UFC is trying to sell. Sometimes it's a different path. So, yeah. Does that make sense, PC?
I'm just here to be unbiased and report facts. Yeah. Be unbiased and report.
I don't think some people realize the lengths we've gone to over the years. And not to say like we're heroes or anything like that, but I do get the feel that people think that we hate MMA and stuff like this. Like they don't. Like I spent probably hundreds of thousands going over and just trying to cover the sport, and went out of my way to get the first news articles in the Irish press about this, so to help people to kind of see it as a real sport and stuff like that. I mean, most media members have stories like that. Like a lot of people were making no money for a very long time before they started making money in this. It's not a thing people are doing for financial gain necessarily. It's like a passion project that you hope turns into something good, you know? So I think that's one thing that a lot of people have arseways. They think we don't love MMA. We fucking love MMA. We love all the people in MMA as well. And I think we're always trying to do, we're always trying to do our best anyway.
And we also try, to me, the best part of being a journalist is that hopefully we get the opportunity to tell stories for the fans out there that just aren't being told. That's all. When Invicta first came around, I was at the first probably 8 or 9 Invicta cards because I thought it was such an important moment for the sport. I was like, we need to be there. And like, I talked to our bosses. I was like, hey guys, can we please get me out there? This is an important thing. And even though there's only like 500 people in that crowd, not 15,000 people, but I feel this is an important event for mixed martial arts, and as storytellers, we need to be there. So that's part of the job as a journalist.
Well said, and I think that's a good way. Unless we have any more questions, I do want to point out two things from our own staff. Damon Martin says the best MMA T-shirt was Jens Pulver's Punch Out. Where he had like the mock punch, like Mike Tyson punch out, but it was a picture of
cool.
Jens Pulver. And then Guillermo Cruz wanted to point out that best shirt or Khabib shirt was before he fought Thiago Tavares in Sao Paulo. When it said just Sambo is easy, it would just be called Jiu Jitsu. So those are two shirts.
That was good. Staff, that was really good.
Two shirts our staff wanted to point out.
This is my worst T-shirt in modern MMA. Here it comes. I was just so disgusted by the design of this.
Oh, yeah. Before
Reebok.
That was after the Horiguchi fight. That was the Horiguchi fight, right?
What the hell is that? Who's Tommy?
So he won a contest or something, and everyone had like Tommy something or other, Bud Light Living. And that was also like it was weird because it was like white with baby blue, and Demetrius Johnson, who's wearing the shirt right now, also had like really white trunks, and the shirt was like too big for him. It was not the best color combination, or even just that this individual's face plastered across Demetrius Johnson's chest. It was an odd time.
That T-shirt is essentially made for one person, so yeah.
Yeah.
Like he has 1,000 fucking T-shirts in his sitting room. Still, it's that all, guy.
This and is around when you would see like dipyourcar.com on like every single shirt. Remember that?
Dude wipes.
Also, Molly McCann on Twitter at Meatball Molly says, "I miss the horns." I assume she assumes the air horn.
Burr, 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 burr.
All right, gotta get one.
Yeah, Molly. That one's for Molly.
We gotta get Molly back on. She was fucking savage.
The story of her beating up that sex trafficker at the 24-hour subway, I saw so many people run with that story. Not just MMA, that was on Yahoo News
Stories for days, man. Like I get you get her on here every day of the week and she'd have a different story every time. Man, Molly is she's salt of the earth, but she's put herself in some crazy situations over the years.
All of the day's work, as you said.
She's a superhero.
Any other questions, Casey? I know we've run a little over time, but questions.
I'm rolling the outro music now.
The outro music is playing for Jose. That's PC. That's Casey. We're still in quarantine. Find this on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, so on and so forth. We'll see you on Friday. We're out.
Thank you, Happy Warrior.
Thank you, Happy Warrior.
Thanks, Roxy, you legend.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.